12-year-old son and another baby on the way this month. Her youngest son, Daniel, lives in Florida, and he's an avid ultimate Frisbee player. So we're honored to have Wanda speak with us on making memories with our children.
Well, I'm something to look at, so be sure you get it. I've never put one of these on before, so here we go. Thank you. Mm-hmm. All righty. Now, if I can find my notes, we'll be good. Here we go. Thank you. Yeah. Well, I've gotten to do this, I looked back at my notes maybe three times before. With different slants to it, and this time it was kind of wide open, making memories, so we'll just make it wide open. I had brought one thing that was already said, but we are having a grandbaby born in March, so I thought, even if it's born after St. Patrick's Day, it'll be okay. So it was fun looking at tiny things. Just in the bathroom, I overheard somebody said, "You won't be judged here," and I don't know what they were being judged for, but it reminded me, one Mother's Day, I was determined I was going to look nice for church, and we were going to be on time. Those are two big goals, and our kids were 22 months apart, and I was still nursing the second one. So we got a lovely Mother's Day picture with my kids, and well, in the picture back then, you had to develop the picture and wait to see it. It's quite obvious that I've been nursing and my flap is down, so I'm lopsided, and there's a nice milk stain on the front. So much for Mother's Day. It was a true indication of what moms do. Not what I had expected. And just another quick story. I have this thing with chapstick. That I just have to have my chapstick. It's over there. And I had the honor of getting to visit McPherson State Prison in Little Rock direction. And I was terrified. I really was having anxiety attacks, nauseated. There was just, it was a very emotional thing for me to get myself to get on the bus to go. And one of the things I was just so concerned about was we couldn't have anything in our pockets. We couldn't have necklaces, couldn't have earrings, anything that could be used for a weapon or somebody might want it, whatever. And I just had to have my chapstick. I can't do it. I don't have God, I gotta have my chapstick. And I was just, you just pick up on these odd things to get all tensed about. Well, I finally figured out that I could take a dab of the chapstick and put it behind my ear. And they didn't check behind my ear to see. So throughout the day, when I felt a little nervous, I just rubbed the back of my ear. So I've got my chapstick in case I get nervous, but I don't have to hide it behind my ear. We recently got a text from my son, and I forgot my husband took my phone to get the battery changed, but it said something like, "Just got locked out of the house. Abraham is inside. I'm outside. Going to have to climb up through the attic and down through the fan hole to get back in." And Abraham, who's just two, had locked the door, not realizing he didn't intentionally lock the door to lock out his dad. He just was quite excited he had locked the door. So my son had to get a ladder, and their house is on a two level, so he had to get the ladder, go around the front, and climb up to this little hole, and then across the living room, and then drop down. He said, "It looks really far to the floor when you're up in the ceiling looking down." And the whole thing that Abraham was upset about was that he'd been on the ladder and Abraham didn't get to be on the ladder, so that was where his concern was. So, and that just kind of leads me. I just want to tell you, ladies, that one of the unexpected joys I've had of being getting to be a grandma, which this is just 2 years now, I just love watching my kids be parents, and it's not something I had ever anticipated. And I just feel like you all know so much more than what I knew as a mom. You get to read a lot of information. You have easier access to ask each other. And a lot of you, your moms might not be close, but there's just a lot of information for you to take in. And so I just really enjoy seeing. And it's fun when they do something that, oh, I taught them that. And they'll tell me where they read about it. Like, oh, I didn't teach that. But So it's just a delight watching you as moms. And I guess the other thing is you can get too much information and then too much stuff that you're supposed to do that we didn't have that can be a real overload. So all this stuff that I'm bringing, I am not in any way a super mom. These are over years of stuff. And a lot of the ideas I did at home, and a lot of them are from having taught Sunday school. So I don't want you leaving thinking, oh, I got to do this, and I got to do that. Just let it stir your mind for what's right for your family. If none of it's right for your family, no problem. So our theme is making memories. Sometimes memories, like we took our kids to an amusement park. We thought that was so wonderful of us. We passed up going to the Boston Pops concert. They don't remember going to the amusement park. I still wish we'd gone to the Boston Pops concert. That would have been a wonderful memory for us. It was an awful day. It was hot. It was an ugly amusement park. They cried. All I could say is it helped build relationship, you know, and they don't even remember it. You know, they were just too little. So think about making your own memories. And when you're making memories for kids, when they're little, probably they aren't going to remember, but it's that building trust with each other. It's having fun together. It's laughing. It's learning to deal with ugly amusement parks. So memories can be, you know, they can work, and sometimes they don't. This week we had Abraham, so I just thought I'd show you a couple things. He's 2, and he's active and curious. It feels like I'm watching my son again. They're just very similar. One of the things we did when, I don't know if any of you know Nathan Piston, Cal and Stephanie Piston, when their little boy was little, we took him to the racquetball court, and we brought out all the balls, and he got to throw the balls. So that's what we did with Abraham. So this is a bucket full of super balls. And we went into the racquetball court and closed the door. And I think we were in there about an hour just throwing the super balls around. And these are the super balls that we had 20 years ago, so longer than that. So that's a simple memory. If we do it again, you know, it'll become a memory. If we don't do it again, it was fun for all of us, and it passed some time. Another thing we did that is a repeat. I have a thing for magnets. I really like magnets. And I found out, if any of you use the Philips electric toothbrush, it's a magnet. I don't recommend the toothbrush for reasons I won't say, but if you have them, keep them. They're good, pretty strong little magnets. So. But what we did is we just dumped paper clips out and found out what things could be picked up and what couldn't be picked up. And he just played with this for a long time. And we put out keys that didn't work, and we put out lids that did work. So part of the time I was on the floor with him, I think that's a lot of making a memory, is getting down there with him. But then after he learned what to do, he was just quite content to pick up magnets. So just play activities can be a good way to make memories and make a mess. The posters here are from first day of school, and we, our very first day of school, we were still in Massachusetts for preschool and kindergarten. So some of these go back to then. It was a tradition that I got very tired of doing, but it was asked for. Once we started, I would make a poster for, I just had the two kids, so that made it easy. I'd make a poster. I'm not very artistic, so I would trace or cut out a picture or whatever, put their name on it, although I noticed that some don't have the name on, draw a picture and try to think of something that they related to. One of the sons, like this one, we were able to use the alien theme for quite a while, and aliens are kind of easy to draw because they don't know what aliens really look like. And then another son was really, they both were, but they're really into Star Trek. You can tell it's the Enterprise, right? And then I noticed we've been having a discussion. My guys went to El Salvador, and we've been having a discussion on what grades they were in. And a couple of these posters refer to that, and they were in 8th and 10th grade. Actually, no, it was 7th and 9th grade. So there's a little bit of history there that, you know, I could go back and look up pictures, but I haven't. So just a little bit of something that relates to your child. The one from first grade for my older son says something Bumblebee. Benjamin Bumblebee says to get well for first grade. So apparently he was sick on the first day of school, a fact I would not have remembered if it wasn't on the poster. And then in college, well, before college, I want to show you how I did these. I would cut out the picture, put it onto the paper, and, you know, grind it in so I could just trace around it. So I am not an artist. I can trace well. This one was fun because Daniel was cross-country, and he had this big, tall Dr. Seuss hat that he wore. So I added the I did the hat all by myself. And then Daniel, or Benjamin, wore a ponytail, and he had a really famous kick where he got fouled and the ball, he got knocked down, and then he hit the ball and made a goal. And so that was our, you know, moment of glory, and that just kind of brings back that memory. Since it's, well, a couple more things. And I just kind of mentioned that making memories of some way or other kind of gives history to your family. Both as you grow up, when you get back together again, thinking back when things happened, just those special memories, some of them planned and some of them just happened. It gives you your family history, how people reacted. Some of them maybe the reaction wasn't good, but now it's funny. Maybe the reaction wasn't good and it still isn't funny, but, you know, memories make your history, help you to remember those things. And I think that making memories can be opportunities for just expressing God's love for your children. For me, just pointing out creation to them was just such an easy attribute of God to convey to them. We would watch the shooting stars, you know, just lots of nature things that are, you don't have to plan them. They're just there happening for you. And just to consciously think to give God the praise that God created these things. One son, there was this beautiful sunset, and he said, "Me and God did it." And I thought, "Oh, how'd you do that?" "God ladder, me and God painted one of them." Oh, you know, he had that idea of relationship that he could do something with God. I didn't correct his theology on that he couldn't create, but it was just a learning moment for me, probably. I have a button can. Did any of you have button cans that you would look at the buttons in? That's kind of what I was guessing. Yeah. That's the mentors. Gosh, I spent a lot of time just going through my mom's buttons, and I would dump them out on a cookie sheet, and I'd remember, you know, that This one was from my mom's coat that she made. This one was from an orange coat that she made for me. This shows the Depression era of my mom, where the buttons are sewed together, hooked together with dental floss so she could use them again. Just a sweet memory. And I did it with my kids. I don't know if they remember, but most of us don't even have button can. How many of you even have a button can? Yeah, good. So the sweet thing with this is when my mom was in hospice care, we still had the button can. And I just spent a lot of time sitting with her and talking about the buttons. So I will claim the button can real fast because I don't think it meant as much to my brothers. But it was just a sweet memory, looking at the buttons. So memories don't have to be big deals. Since it's springtime, I thought we'd do, I'd just tell you a couple of springtime things. The first day of spring, we would a lot of times have a picnic. This was something we did as a couple before we had kids. And as a couple, we said we had to do it outside. So there was days when we would have a picnic in the snow. We were in Virginia. It was very cold the first day of spring. With the kids, we were a little bit more flexible. We would put a blanket on the floor. It might be outside, but it was just that acknowledgement of the first day of spring. For the first, not day of winter, but the first really cold, wet, sort of windy day, we would roast hot dogs. We have a fireplace, so we would roast hot dogs, and Ray and I still do that. It's, you know, it's nice not to have to figure out what to have for supper. You could have hot dogs, but you could do anything. You know, roast marshmallows over the burner on the stove. Just something to acknowledge, winter's coming. The joke in our house was it was the day that I would always drain the hoses, you know, when the freezing rain's coming down and it's all this and we've had all these nice days, but now you got to drain the hoses. So that was not planned for the tradition, but it was there. I think scripturally God wants us to remember, and there's if you look up altars, there's lots of build an altar unto me. And one of the stories is when Joshua and the Israelites had come out of the desert, and they were crossing a river, and they had the ark, and God stopped the waters from flowing so that they were able to cross the river, very similar to the Red Sea. But then God tells them to get 12 stones. Now, I think stones must have been more like what we'd say boulders, because they talk about putting them on their shoulders and carrying them. But he had them put them into the river, so they had to be big enough where they weren't washed away. And he says, each of you take up a stone on his shoulder according to the number of the tribes of the Israelites to serve as a sign among you. In the future, when your children ask you, what do these stones mean? Tell them that the flow of the river was cut off before the Ark of the Covenant. When it crossed the Jordan, the waters of the Jordan were cut off. And this is the important part. The stones are to be a memorial to the people of Israel forever. In other words, when you look at those stones, remember me. And I think that can be a lot of what memories, as we build memories, if we build that the attributes of God, our relationship to God, into making those memories, that when we recall those things, it's like an altar, like a stone, where we can remember. And if the kids say, you know, what did we do this for? You know, and you don't have to spiritualize everything. You know, it's just the flow of how some things come out. I was thinking of Melissa Varner, just the huge altar they have of these months in the hospital, that there will be a story of healing, and it's going to be a time, I mean, that's part of Levi's, huge part of his story now. And they will be able to give God praise for this horribly hard time that they're going through and how God brought them through. So it can be just life situations that you build an altar, or more things that you have to plan. As our kids were older, we used to have a Passover. And on the piece of paper on the very bottom, I put my email address. If any of you want kind of a simplified version of the Passover, if you'll email me, I'd be glad to send it. It's not a polished thing, but it'll give you an idea of what we did as a family. But it really helped us, the adults and kids, to really understand the Lamb of God, that the whole idea of that sacrifice. And it really wasn't until we did that that in my spiritual life I really started truly understanding that they had to sacrifice the Lamb and what the Lamb of God is. And so it was just a real special thing. We didn't do it every year. As the kids got older, it was harder, and we always did it with another family. So I don't know, we probably did it 5 times. So it was something, we did it often enough where we remembered it. And as the kids got older, you know, we could add more to it. And a really neat thing, the other family was the Hansen family. And Alicia had graduated from college and living in Alaska. And on the eve of Passover, she called me. I just love this. And said, Wanda, I'm just thinking of our times together of Passover. I was like blown away. She's in Alaska. She's graduating from college. They live in Oklahoma City, the rest of the family. And it was just a sweet moment to recall that we had celebrated Passover and that it still meant something to us. Miles apart, even though we weren't even, none of us were doing the Passover that particular evening. So that was a sweet memory, added a sweet memory to a memory that it was still important to all of us. For spring, I was in a church, and I don't know if any of you are in similar situations where there was not any, you weren't supposed to have Easter bunnies, baskets, whatever, as part of your Easter celebration. Same way with Santa Claus. And it was real confusing to me because I grew up with that. It did not make me think Jesus was an Easter bunny or that Santa was, you know, I didn't have those issues with it. But during that time, I had to kind of think, how are we going to celebrate? And I didn't want to give up the Easter bunny and hiding eggs and all those things. So we kind of, and again, it wasn't every year, but we kind of made the first day of spring, we would kind of celebrate that more with an Easter egg hunt. We would do the kite flying. I have a whole bunch of rabbits, stuffed rabbits that I'd put out on the couch. And some years we just did it for Easter, but there were years when I just kind of separated the Easter celebration and made it a praising God for his celebration kind of thing. So that's purely just an idea. I don't have any problem with whatever, whatever, how people celebrate, but it is hard to keep your focus on Easter for kids. It's the Easter eggs thereafter, and so it can kind of separate those things. What we did do for Easter, on the table there's a little plate of cookies. I don't know if I made enough or not. I only did one batch, but these are called resurrection cookies. And to me, they're meringue cookies that you make at Christmas time. You're all welcome to have one. They're just little. And the handout on your page is the recipe for that. This particular recipe uses vinegar, which I had never... I always use cream of tartar, but whatever. But it's a whole series of scriptures using concrete items. So they use the vinegar for the kids to smell and talk about Jesus being given vinegar to drink when he'd asked for water. The egg whites, life, it's kind of what we say for Easter eggs. The salt, talking about the disciples' tears that their Savior was leaving them. And with each of these, there's a scripture, which if your kids are older, you could certainly work in them reading the scriptures or whatever. And moms, don't you do this. Like, let the kids try to make it if they're old enough. You know, it would make a lovely display, but the idea is why you're doing it is to smell things. And they have you pound pecans at the beginning, like you're pounding the nails into the cross. That would have been too much for my kids when they were little. They wouldn't have liked pounding the pecans if they thought it was like putting the nail into Christ's hands. So I don't know. I don't think I would even do that one, but that, you know, each kid is different in what you can handle. And then when you fold in the nuts, it's a reminder of the rocky tomb. I was thinking it could be a reminder of the rocky road he walked carrying his cross. So they're just objects to make a lesson of the Easter story. Again, this wouldn't be something for really little kids. You could talk about the sweetness of Jesus' love. You could talk about when the cookies, I think they're supposed to be way bigger, where they kind of puff up and are hollow, the empty tomb, that kind of thing. So it's just a way to, anytime you involve your taste and your sight and actions, you know, you're going to remember it all more. And then you take the oven closed, as if you're putting the cookies, the body, into the tomb. And the lady who told me about this, they slept on the floor like they were the Roman soldiers guarding the body. So that was part of the night before Easter, was getting to sleep on the floor and be the Roman soldiers. And she said it was really cool. So I actually have not done this one with my kids. It was told to me just in the last few years. Another thing we would do for Easter is on Friday night, I was so proud of myself. I had found my doll in an unexpected place that I usually use. I put it somewhere where I would know could go right to it. I don't know where it is now, but we had a little floppy doll, just a little rag doll kind of thing. And on Friday night, we would talk about the crucifixion, you know, that Jesus had died. And then we would take gauze, and the doll was much smaller than this, but we would just wrap the whole body. And I was thinking that, you know, I thought, teddy bear is kind of disrespectful. But then I thought, you know, the teddy bear is kind of precious. It can be precious to a child. And you might understand a little bit more that this was a grievous thing to be losing their friend and they had to bury him. So, you know, whatever you have, you can accommodate it. That's my timer, 20 minutes. So we would wrap it up and then we would put it in the bag. And we really would... It was a solemn thing we did. You know, there'd be jokes as we were wrapping it and stuff. But putting it in the bag, we talked about that Jesus was dead, that the disciples did not think they would see him alive again. They didn't know. So we'd just talk about it, and then we would, you know, I don't have any brown lunch bags anymore, but that's what we would use, is a brown lunch bag. And then we would just put a rock on it. And we would put it where somewhere all day Saturday we would see it and just kind of remember the disciples were really sad. Mary, Jesus' mother, was really sad. It was a dark, grievous day for them. And then Sunday morning when the kids would come out, the bag would be, the stone would be rolled away and the body would be gone. And we'd talk about the empty tomb. This one is one that works well, I think, for fairly young children to understand. And if I had been really industrious, I would have baked a nice big bundt cake, but no way. This was the hammer that you could use for pounding the pecans if you so choose. These were just nails that I collected, because most of the time when we see nails for the cross, we see just little symbolic nails. And I doubt that even these are the size of what they're called, spikes, but... again, just a little bit of an object lesson of that it was painful. This would, I have a hard time with that. I don't know what age kids are ready for what, or what age I'm ready to say what really happened. That's probably the more truthful side. But just getting nails that really show this is what Jesus went through. But we would bake a resurrection cake, and some years it was just a sheet cake. When we were fancy, we would make a big double chocolate bundt cake. And then the kids would decorate it, and they did well with it. Sometimes we would cut a piece out and make the tomb whole. That was our preferred method. But if not, we would just set a rock, usually clean. depending. And I don't have, I I have a little piece of cloth that's cut that we would lay inside the hole for the linen that was over Jesus. We would have crosses that we'd stick in to the cake. Sometimes we had one, sometimes three. Sometimes they made, you know, put them together to out of sticks to make them. Usually there's green coconut, which probably, I'm guessing there may not have been that much green grass there, but we would have green coconut. And then we always had the Lego soldiers, and they were always put on their back because they were knocked out cold by the angel appearing. And we have a palm tree that would, you know, it varied from year to year, but there was a palm tree that would go in. So it was really a creative way for the kids to do whatever they wanted. You know, I started off doing it with them, but they got where they really took it over. And then the angel would come and announce. The nice thing about this whole project is if you have company for Easter, it's a very nice way to be able to explain the Easter story without being preachy, a lot of the time the kids would do it, or I'd just ask, now what does this stand for? What does this stand for? So it was a way to share the gospel with other people, and nobody's threatened because it's just a cake. So that was good. Okay, so as far as memories, I think they're just a fun way of fabric sometimes. Just letting memories happen, to be aware that we've got a memory that we can enjoy here. Other times, you know, it takes some work to do it. And by the way, on the breakfast, there was a menu. The monkey bread, had to have eggs, had to have bacon. I mean, it was quite an elaborate meal, and I kept trying to get out of that. And even the first 2 years of college, we still did this, and they still wanted the same menu, but in college, I said, no more pictures. If you want a picture, you got it yourself. But one of the moms after one of these meetings came to me and said that they just had frozen waffles because that was a treat for their kids. I was like, yes, start off simple. Don't do all this other stuff. Although food is fun, we have to admit that. So I think we're going to open it up for questions with the other mentor moms. And have fun making memories. Oh, here's my piece of linen for the... I'd say.
I want to play ball.
Yeah.
Good morning. Great. Thank you, Wanda. That was wonderful. Appreciate that so much. So we just wanted to open it up to you guys if you have any questions for these wonderful people. Anything about making memories, anything about anything like that.
What's a memory of something you're really glad that you did that you could share with us?
I think holidays are a really big deal to kids, and I think if you make a big deal out of a holiday, then they're going to remember it more. And I was thinking about Easter in particular. We had 10 nieces and nephews that often came to our house for Easter. So we did Easter baskets and I used to hate that Easter grass. I had a lot of Easter baskets, and you would be picking it up till July. And so I, 1 year, bought pom-poms. And they go in, and they don't shed. A little bit, but not like, so I brought this to show you. But anyway, we did lots of Easter egg hunts. We did the Easter egg story. And I wanted to tell you that at Hobby Lobby now, they have a set of Easter eggs that have little symbols, like Wanda was showing you. The nail is small because it fits inside an Easter egg, but it's got the rooster, it's got little symbols that you can open, and it's got a book that comes with it, and you can open each one, each Easter egg, and it tells the Easter story. So that's a really fun thing to do with your kids. So
probably our Friday night family times and prayer times that we still do.
Describe that a little bit more, Sherry.
Well, we actually didn't start it till my kids were grown, and then my son wanted us to. I actually can't remember for sure when it started, but he wanted us to do something active outside because he was a teenager and he felt like he just needed the distraction or release. So we started going either to the gym. And we would alternate soccer, indoor soccer back then, volleyball, basketball. We're not very good at any of them, but we have fun. And then we would go get pizza together, and then we would pray. Mm-hmm. And now a lot of times we walk the trail together with my grandkids and everything, and then we go get pizza, and then we go to one of the houses to pray. So we still do that.
Every Friday night?
Every Friday night. Wow. I mean, no one's required to go, but... Most of them come. It's kind of a free meal for them because we do pay for it.
At what point did you start doing that? At what age did you start
doing that? Well, I know that Ben was a teenager when he asked us to start doing something active. We may have been kind of playing games or doing stuff at home. I'm not sure, but it wasn't a regular thing. So then we started that, and then a few years later, Hannah came to us and said, we don't pray together as a family anymore like we did when we were kids. And I don't know, and there's six kids. And she said, I don't know how to pray for my siblings. You know, I don't know what's going on in their lives. So she asked us to consider praying together as a family. And I couldn't figure out how to fit it in except family night. And I was so scared my kids were going to think, no, that's our fun night. But they loved it. In fact, I have a daughter-in-law who's not very athletic, but she will not miss the prayer time.
One of the things we did when we went on vacations is had our kids write journals. And I wasn't always really happy with my one who's the best at journaling, she was the youngest of the three oldest. Then I had the surprise later. But anyway, she would write things like, you know, we went to Universal Studios one time. She didn't write about that. She wrote about how her brother irritated her in the van. You know, and I was like, really? But, you know, but late, like, we got that out last Christmas and laughed and laughed. It was so funny, you know. And so journaling is a great thing.
I asked my kids to tell me, so what are some of your memories? Because I thought of Annette who, you know, so different. Anyway, so Carl was the one who responded to me. And one of the things he said was traditions. And the two traditions that he mentioned were Saturday morning breakfast. We still do big breakfast. So I would make waffles or I'd make pancakes and we'd have eggs and Daddy would make special drink, and which was smoothies. And we would just sit around and have big breakfast, and it continues to this day that if they're home, that's what we do. The other thing, and this was really more about me, but when we would take road trips to Wisconsin to see my mom, we would always stop at the Dairy Queen on the way up and on the way back because I really like mulattes. So it became a tradition to do that, and we also did that. They were my kids swam competitively. So we would usually find a Dairy Queen when we were coming home at the end of a swim meet weekend. And those were the two things that Carl mentioned as far as he had four foundations of things, but that was his traditions, were the breakfast and Dairy Queen. So.
funny our traditions are around food so much, isn't it?
Yeah.
We are.
There's research about that.
That's right.
There's also research about smells that you're strong. Yeah, that triggers and brings back the strongest memories. So.
There was one thing I was thinking of earlier before I came, and then Wanda kind of mentioned it, is that sometimes we think we're going to make memories with our kids. They need to be fun. They just have to be these great, over-the-top fun. But when my kids get together, they like to talk about growing up and things they remember, and their memory is always way different than mine. But one thing, just the other day, Liza was talking, because we just lost my mom, so we've been talking a lot about memories. But Liza was telling me, we were sitting at the table Sunday, and she was talking to, I forget how many siblings were there, but she was like, remember we had to go help cut wood? And she said, I remember my friends saying, complaining about the chores they had to do and they had to clean the room. And Liza's like, you have got to be kidding me. When we go help cut wood, they knew they might be out there. Well, they had to be out there until their dad was tired. And back then, that would be hours and hours and hours. But I got to thinking about that. And even though that's not her fun memory, it's a memory. And it creates a community, a sense of community and belonging and family that a lot of kids don't have. Mm. And so you're making memories all the time. They, you know, and sometimes they're chores.
That was my thought. I don't know that we necessarily intentionally, I mean, we did things like at holidays and that kind of thing where first day of school, I would, even though we homeschooled, I always got new pencils and I always, you know, those kinds of things. So I did those kinds of things. But there were a lot of things, especially when I read through Carl's stuff, it wasn't things that we necessarily intentionally did, but he remembers it as something really special. Things that the other thing he said was excitement. And one of his memories is anytime we would do something, if we'd be in a new place, Matt, my husband, would just go galloping on ahead. And he said, I love that. And I always wanted to keep up with Dad because I knew there was going to be some joy in this thing that we were going to do. And I really looked forward to the joy of it just because you guys had enthusiasm and excitement about what we were going to do. And believe me, there are times where I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, this is not going to be that much fun. But, you know, you got to play the part. So you get excited about it. And they love that. I mean, that just turned them on. And it was just things that, simple things like riding a bicycle as a family. We take little family bike rides and stop and look at things. Or one of the other things he mentioned, and he was, I mean, I remember this was not that long ago. He was either in high school or college or something, and we were walking down a road, and all of a sudden he grabbed Matt's arm. And Carl's very outgoing. And anyway, so he started dancing, follow the yellow brick road, follow the yellow. And then everybody started getting into it and just banging into each other, and it became by the, you know, a couple blocks down the street, and we were in hysterics. And they were older, but he said that was just one of my best memories because it was just so much fun to just kind of be goofy together, and we all got goofy together. So there were a lot of things that just kind of happened, yeah, and that they look back on and say, that was just so great that we did that. And like you said, Cherry, just the whole thing about we're the Andersons, we're a family, we're in this together, and that just made an impression on them to the point when, okay, I'm going way too long, but I'll share this one quick thing. When Carl was in high school and wanted to be a bad boy, the thing that kept him from really going over to rebellion was his family. And he's told us that recently, that he said, I just couldn't disappoint you guys. Mm-hmm. Even though I really wanted to be a bad boy, but I couldn't. And I think it was because of all those things that we'd built into him, and not even intentionally, for 15 years. And that was the thing that really made him decide, I can't do it because I don't want to disappoint them.
Any other questions?
I'll just fill in with a thought. I always have liked looking at sunsets, and I would frequently show the kids the sunsets. And there was one day when Daniel said, Mom, come look at this. And you know how it is. It might be a brick that's been sitting there forever, or it might be something exciting. And I was doing dishes, and I said, just a minute. And then when I went out, he said, you're too late. You missed it. And I was like, oh. And it had been a beautiful sunset. And I just kind of made a commitment at that point to think, when my kids say, come look at this, go look. Most of the time, it was something quite worthwhile to look at. And just kind of a sweet thing that God did. We liked looking at spider webs. And when my last one went off to college, not a good scene. I mean, I was just really sad. And one of the things I kept thinking, nobody's around to look at spider webs. You know, I'm going on and on. There won't be as much underwear to wash. You know, you'd think I'd be happy about that. And all of a sudden, there's a knock on the door. And I'm just really going through. You think kindergarten's hard, ladies. And there was a knock on the door, and it was the little neighbor boy, Zach. And he came and goes, Miss Wanda, come look. So I went out to look, and look at that spider way up there. And it's like, oh, Lord, you are so sweet to let me know that there is still somebody to look at things with. So God provides what we as moms need to.
I think my kids remember all the disasters. That's what they remember. You know, all the, you know, if we had a good vacation, it was really not unmemorable. And my parents always said this to me, said, well, if this hadn't happened, we would not remember it. If everything had gone right, we would not remember it. And that's so true. So I think a lot of our vacations, you know, that's what my kids remember is the things that happened that were like, oh my word, what am I going to do? And we had a lot of fun vacations. We had, we tried to do things and we did them cheap. You know, we never were extravagant, like packing sandwiches, like we eat one meal a day out, you know, because if we were at a hotel, that was breakfast included, right? You know, and then we'd have one meal that we'd pay for but lunch was always like, okay, it's bread, it's sandwich, it's something that I have in the car that we're going to, you know, put together. And, I think they, you know, they remember stuff like that. And they all like to travel, too. So when I was young, we traveled a lot. And I didn't ever know that my sisters didn't like it. I always thought we all liked it. Apparently, I was the only one who was having a good time. But my kids all like to travel. And I hear them talking now with their families, you know, about, you know, that they want to do that. And I think that's neat, too, to be together. Because we were all trapped in a car. Trapped. I love that, you know, because really, and even now with my husband, I love it. You know, we drive. I'm like, this is good because, you know, we don't have anything else that can happen except we're just, yeah.
We had a very small minivan. It seated seven, but my friend called it the mini minivan. And the kids would be so crowded and irritating each other on trips because we traveled quite a bit. And then we got a big van, like a full-size van. And at first I felt like I was driving around with my living room behind me. It was so weird. But I thought, the kids will never fight. They'll have so much space. They were like, you know, they just, it's sibling rivalry, and they are going to bother each other, but they love each other, you know, and sometimes when they were nasty to each other, I'm saying, you're doing this because you really love each other, you know.
Yeah, that's right. You only hurt the ones you love.
I'm going to actually put a plug in, but one of the things that Carl mentioned, too, was new experiences, and we only live two blocks from JBU, and they have a friendship program with the Walton students. And so when Carl was four, we had our first Walton. And it really was a great experience for them, growing up to have a lot of different students, gals and guys from various Central American countries to come and eat at our table. And we didn't do a lot of extra things. We just had them over once in a while to eat with us. But he mentioned that as just loving having a different culture, different foods, you know, just listening to stories. When they started the Perspectives on the World Christian Movement classes at JBU, Matt and I were able to have the speakers in at our home, and just to have those missionaries share some of their stories and that kind of thing. So, you know, maybe you can't make a long-term commitment, but I really encourage you when your kids are little, if you have a student that's at your church, and you can take them along home with you for lunch or invite them over on a Saturday or something to have a meal with you and expose your kids to a different culture and a different people group. I mean, it is really rich, and it was a really rich thing for our family, and we ended up being able to be a part of weddings and that kind of thing, too, to travel and go to a wedding and be in it, and just a lot of fun. Sherry can tell you lots of stories because she's, like, extraordinary in this, but I really encourage you. I know that maybe you don't always feel comfortable with hospitality, but you know what? They're just happy to have something that's not in the calf. So, you know, that was just a real rich thing for our family, and he mentioned that as one of the things that he really appreciated that we did.
Now, I'll back that up a little bit. We needed a babysitter, and so my husband announced the class to see if anybody wanted to babysit. Well, it turned out to be an El Salvador guy who wanted to come and babysit, and he became David Cabezas, became a close family friend, and it was so fun because, like, he'd never seen snow, so when it snowed, I could hear them laughing and yelling outside because they were jumping off the deck into the snow. And, you know, as a college student, he would spoil them. He would, anytime they would go driving, and I don't even want to know what all happened, but he would always have a bag of candy, and that I think they did things I don't want to know. They flew airplanes in the JL, and they made paper airplanes and flew them. So he just did things that parents don't always think or want to do. And so he was just fun. And then he invited them to come to El Salvador for Christmas one year. And it was really a big decision because they had just had the Civil War was ending. In the bedroom that they ended up staying in, there was bullet holes in the ceiling. So it took a lot of praying on our part to open up our hands and release them. But what a memory for them to get to be in the home. And they were treated like little prince. I mean, they were treated royally. And then David came back for Ben's wedding. So, yeah, it's just really, and personally, I think it's easier having students over when you have kids because they do all the entertaining. You know, it's easier for the students to talk to the kids, and I haven't done as well since the kids have been gone as I did when they were home. So don't wait until, you know, your kids are cute now, so take advantage of that.
We have certain things, too, that are just like family sayings, and, you know, you just say them over and over, and it's just part of your family, so.
Yeah. Tell your Be of Good Cheer story. How you say the verse and say, but be of good cheer.
In this world, you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer, for I have overcome the world. So, and the kids are, when they're whining, you will have tribulation.
Put a smile on that face.
One time we were in a boat. David's father had an old boat, and David kind of kept it going. It was a big problem. But anyway, we took the boat to the boat ramp, put it in. It's so exciting. The whole family's all together, and we're going off on Beaver Lake, and it starts smoking. And I'm thinking, what if the engine catches on fire? And I say to two kids, okay, if there's a fire, you jump that way. And I'm saying to Dave, I'll take the little one, you know. And so anyway, it turned out it just died. And we're stuck there in the middle of the lake, and it's kind of like dusk, you know. And we were supposed to take it back to the dock where David's parents were waiting for us. So we didn't show. Finally, they sent somebody out to save us. And I mean, there was like a paddle. There was no way you could get where we needed to go. And so we're just sitting there in the boat, you know, and the kids are whining. And finally we get the people that they sent had a tow rope, and they took us back to the dock. And I said to one of the kids, wow, we had a big adventure, didn't we? She said, we did? So sometimes we say, wow, we had a big adventure that time when something terrible happens. You know,
Same thing happened to us, Cindy, so I don't know if I should say this because we're not on boats, but anyway, our boat died in Beaver Lake, and we thought, well, somebody will come, and I think it was early in the year. Yeah, it was real early, so there weren't a lot of boaters, but it was a nice day, and we're sitting there, and we realized there's no boats. I mean, there's no boats on Beaver Lake. You know, there's always a fisherman, or there's always people pontooning. We're sitting there, and there's like no, so I think we waited an hour. We started eating our sandwiches, of course, you know. And we're not panicking because everyone's laying in the sun. They're, you know, they're having good. And then all of a sudden, we think, this is like, there's nobody here, and nobody is coming. And there was one boat way far away. And we were like, you know, well, there were. And finally, the girls got in and jumped in and then swam our whole boat to the nearest, you know, beach. Yeah, beach, yeah. So they love that. They love that story. That was really fun because they were the saviors, you know. And that was all their swim training, you know, from being the swim team. Funny. They were, yeah, those are funny.
So bad things make good memories sometimes.
Yeah.
Anybody think of a question?
Well, I was thinking you said bad memories too, yeah. And some of our really precious memories are centered around grief, and just that we did it together and how we did it and how we handled it, and so yeah.
I come from a family of morticians, funeral directors, and so you never knew that. Well, now you know that. I have many funeral directors in my family, so I'll have a good funeral someday. They all, my cousins are all telling me, now be sure you tell me when your parents get, you know, if anything happens, call us. I'm like, okay. Anyway, my uncles, I mean, being from that family, I thought, death, you know, he says, you know, I had two uncles that were had funeral homes, and then their kids have all kind of become funeral, a lot, many of their family funeral directors. But anyway, they said, I couldn't do this if I wasn't a Christian. They said, because this body, we know it's nothing. We know they're gone, you know. But he said, can you imagine if I thought this was something, if I thought what this is here was more than just dust again, you know, a shell, yeah, empty shell. And I grew up really, I didn't have any, you know, I don't have a fear of death or anything, especially, you know, we know Christ. And, of course, that's you know, what the hope we have is knowing Christ and knowing what our future is, not here, but it's in heaven. So anyway, we had a lot of fun stories. And our funerals, I really want them to be rejoicing, you know, because we do have that. And if they're a Christian, boy, we should just be so thankful. We miss them, but we know where they are and how exciting that is to, you know, to have that.
Mm-hmm. And respectful. So, yes. Like, my kids are 6 and under, mm-hmm. but my husband's boss just passed away, and so mm-hmm. this would be, like, the first funeral that they'll be able to remember, and, mm-hmm. like my 6 and 5-year-old, yeah. Obviously, the others won't, but, like, I kind of have the viewpoint, like my mom did, of just, yeah, we're going to go as a respect to the family. Mm-hmm. Did you guys ever have cautions about taking your children to funeral? I had a terrible memory about my very first funeral. It was like really weird. It just creeped me out because I didn't know what to expect and I didn't know what was going to happen. And then there was this body that was my grandpa, and there he is.
And look at it.
Right, yeah, right. Yeah. Nobody prepped me for that, you know. So, like, did you guys, take your children and kind of talk them through that? Like, we've covered the whole he's in heaven now, that basis, but just the whole, like, walking through the motions of going to a funeral.
We did take our kids. We had quite a few older relatives, and so our kids have been to quite a few funerals. But we always talked to them about it a lot, about usually not every single one knew the Lord. So we talked about that a lot. But kids, I don't know what They always remember, you know. My one grandmother wanted to be cremated, and my mother was explaining this to my niece, how it all works. And my niece said, "Can we watch?" Oh, no, no. You know, it's, they do get really weird ideas in their heads, you know. So, yeah, you got to really talk to them a lot. But, yeah, you know, I can remember riding in a big hearse with little kids and talking to them about how they're in heaven and the body that we see isn't really them, you know.
Yeah. I think that's a good conversation, you know, to have, too, before, you know, like you're saying. I don't remember having a bad experience with a funeral because I think we went to every funeral, but I had a friend of mine who said, "I do not want to go to a funeral. I don't take my kids to funerals," you know. And she had to work through that, though, because she felt it was her fear, you know, and she was kind of giving it all to her kids, too, you know, to say it was almost like and they say there's part of grief in that. You know, there's a grieving you do, and, you know, I guess it's just helpful, you know, to have that, too, even though it's hard. And so anyway, she did kind of challenge herself and said, "Well, I don't want to be this, I don't want to have that, and I want to make sure my kids are not having that same fear or, you know, anxiety about that."
Yeah, I always took mine. And one exception, I think we lost my great-grandmother when my boys were 1 and 3, and we had enough great-great-grandkids that someone volunteered to keep at the church, so my 1-year-old didn't go, but I took my 3-year-old. And because he could explain that, and it's a good time to go ahead and start, because at 3 years they can understand so much. And so we just explained it. And it really comes home that it's really good to do that as much as you have opportunity, because you don't always have opportunity to take your children to a funeral or to explain. And when my husband's family spread out, his baby sister was 3 years old when we married, and she went to her first funeral at 18. Yeah. And she was struggling big time, majorly big time. And it was hard for me to understand, because I grew up going to lots of funerals, and I had grandparents who sang at funerals, and I often went with them. So I have gone to, you know, I could probably say 1,000 and not be off, you know, just lots and lots of funerals earlier in life and on through. I had a hard time knowing how to understand where she was and trying to figure out anything I could do to help her, any words. And it was a struggle. It was so much easier to teach my children as they went along as to, to try to find some way to comfort her or help her to deal with it.
Thank you for that. These are kind of uncharted waters where it's you don't want to look back and be like, maybe we shouldn't have taken them to that. You know what I mean? So this feedback's great.
One thing, when kind of two directions that it's good to go, and you said this, I think, to go to funerals that where the person isn't as important to the child, so that when it is somebody important, they kind of know what to expect. We've tended to sit in the back row, especially if the body was on display, and that's partly probably our own emotional things, but I just didn't want the kids to be scared, so we would sit on the kind of toward the back, and we never made them go forward to look at a body, because for some people that's just a traumatic thing, and other people are very comfortable with it, and you don't always know before you go what's going to be there, but we would try to talk about that, you know, that they may have the dead person so you can look at them again, and why? Why do they want? Yeah, well, so, you know, there's lots of questions that come up with that maybe you haven't even answered for yourself. And it was sweet. We had two older ladies that when they died, they had picture displays, you know, different things, and our kids were in those pictures because they had been friends with the older ladies, and they were a little bit older too, but they had visited and they were friends with them, but they'd been to funerals, so now it wasn't this shock to them of seeing somebody they really knew well.
I haven't thought about this for years, but when my grandma died, my grandma was a seamstress, and so her hands just sewed a lot. She sewed a lot of the clothes for me growing up. So when her body was there, I wanted to reach out and touch her hand, and it was a big shock to me how cold it was. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something you might prepare your kids for, that if you're going to, you know, her hands were just there, and I just wanted mm-hmm. to touch her hand, and I was like, you know, so it was cold. It wasn't her warm hand that I was used to. But I was going to say, take your kids to weddings, too, if you can. I know kids aren't always invited to weddings, but what a great thing. You know, if you can teach them to be quiet and take them, it's such a good learning experience, and it's joyful and a celebration. And our kids grew up, we took our kids to JBU. We always get wedding invitations, you know, and so we took our kids to lots of weddings, and I think it was really good for them. And then my daughter-in-law, when she came into our family, she'd never been to a wedding. Her parents had always gotten a babysitter for her, and I was like, that was weird. You know, so if you can, that's a good way to make memories. Yeah. So. When I was in, I was probably late middle school, early high school, and our family went on a vacation to Elephant Rock, Missouri. We were doing all kinds of things in Missouri, but I thought it just sounded horrible, and I sat in the car, and I was mad mm-hmm. and grouchy, and my brother and sister had a great time and yeah. came and told me how wonderful it was. Yeah. And years later, we took our kids to Elephant Rock, and I was like, I was so stupid. Why would, you know, I was a teenager. Yeah. You know? Yeah. And my parents just let me sit in the car because I had a bad attitude, and I think they should have made me go see how cool it was.
I don't remember details, but I know there was some point in time when probably sibling rivalry, all that fussing kind of thing, probably set me over or something. Seems like I lost it or something, and then I think it put a real damper on the situation, you know, and then you just regret it, and you, because you hate it so bad, you shove it down, so I can't tell you details.
I remember it. I don't want to talk about it. No, I can remember, okay, being in Disneyland. I was so mad at Dennis. And I thought that I was, well, it happened. And, okay, I'm a little justified because, yeah, because it wasn't really all my fault. Well, you know, you have the cell phone. Of course, this is years ago when they aren't that big. You know, they weren't, everybody didn't. I didn't have a cell phone. So he had the cell phone. And he got calls from work, like in Disneyland. And constantly he was getting it. And finally I said, I can't believe you're answering that phone. I was so mad. And so anyway, I wouldn't even walk with him through Disney, you know, for a while through Disneyland, you know, because I was so mad that he was. And I said, you know, can't you just turn that off, you know? And I remember thinking that nobody knew me at Disneyland. So I, you know, raised my voice at him because I, you know, because we were walking. And, of course, we're with people. There are people all over, you know, Disneyland. And I was thinking, well, they don't even know me. I don't even care. I think I got over it sometime. My lands, why do you do that? Why did I do that? I mean, I still remember that. See, I remember being so ugly. Ugh.
And your kids were watching all this.
Well, I don't. I tried to be a little, you know, but I knew they knew, they definitely knew it was tension because I think they were on a ride. And I was like, you know, like we were like, yeah, anyway. They always know when you're mad, you know. Even if you start to say, I'm not mad. We're not mad at each other.
And they say, don't yell at me. And you say, I'm not yelling. I'm speaking firmly.
But, I mean, they know when I'm mad at Dennis. You know, if I'm not mad at them at all, they still know. Even if we try to, if we think we're putting on this mask. Yeah.
I think one of my personality characteristics is that I really like structure. And I really need structure in my life. But if I could do it over, I wish I'd been more flexible. Mm-hmm. If I could go into whatever situation and be more flexible. For example, we were on a trip to Colorado, and we were driving, and we were all in the van, and we got there at I don't know, 5 o'clock at night or whatever, and every motel in Colorado was, or in Pueblo, Colorado, was booked for some motorcycle thing or whatever. We ended up sleeping in the van all night long. Well, rather than making it an adventure like you all were good at doing, I was not a happy camper. And to this day, I regret that I wasn't a happy camper, because I slept sitting up all night long, and my kids were all different places in the van. But if I could go back and redo things, I wished I'd been more flexible in my life when the unexpected happened, or if the kids were fighting, or if, you know, if you can just take a deep breath and just remember, even the hard things are memories, and good can come from it. So I would be more flexible if I could redo it.
Another favorite family quote: one time we were standing in a long, hot line waiting for some ride. It was up a mountain. It was at Stone Mountain, Georgia. But anyway, the boy in front of us was just whining and whining and fussy. And we're all just like, what's his mom going to do? And finally she goes, look, we are here to have a happy family time. And if you don't be quiet, I'm going to shove a sock in your mouth. Kids, we're like, and so now sometimes when somebody's whining, we say, look, we are here to have a happy family time.
One more question, any more questions?
I just want to make one comment that we do make mistakes and ruin different things, but I think if it becomes a pattern where you're seeing this is always happening, then, you know, go to God. If you need counseling, I ended up going through counseling for several years because of a pattern I was seeing in myself. But kids grow through those hard times. For me, having company was and is a stressful thing. And I got where I apologized to my boys beforehand that I knew I was going to get mad. Don't take it personal. And they were a great help. I missed them a lot when they were away from home. But I think they kind of learned we aren't all perfect. There's situations that cause us stress. Most of the time I was fairly level, but there's something about company coming, because I'm not structured. That's Pam and I are real opposite. I would love to be structured.
I would love to be one.
So, you know, give yourself forgiveness. And sometimes it's not as bad to the kids as what we remember. And there's times when you may need to go back to your kids and say, remember when this happened? I just want to tell you I'm really sorry about that. If you need to explain a little bit, ask their forgiveness. That's okay, too. We aren't perfect moms or dads. And if we were, it'd be a really unrealistic expectation for our kids to grow up being perfect. So be kind to yourself.
Okay, I think we'll wrap up. Thank you all so much, and thanks for your questions. In closing, this has been on my heart the last couple of weeks, so I'm just going to put a plug in here for, you know, all of Wanda's ideas that she shared today wouldn't happen unless she was intentional. And any of us that did anything in what you're doing as well, be intentional. Don't let the moment pass that you'll look back and wish you'd done it. And you know, sometimes we think we're so tired, and it's okay to be tired, but don't be passive in life and not take the times that you can with your kids to make a memory, because you only get one chance. And I know you all hear that, but that's just really been something the Lord's been reminding me of in life, even now, not to be passive with whatever he's putting on my heart or whatever, but especially as moms with little kids, take your chances, be intentional. And I have a college-age guy, a son who's thanked Jim and I for being intentional, because he's been through some classes in seminary where he's seen families that haven't had that intentionality, and and that these kids have really struggled without parents who cared. And so you're doing a great job caring. You wouldn't be here if you weren't caring. But, yeah, go home and be intentional with creating memories with your kids, good and bad ones. So, Becky, I'll turn this over to you. Is somebody cleaning up?